I want to run down a couple of things and just give me quick thumbnail impressions of the was it good? Did it taste good? Not whether you could eat it, but so and then just so just you know, quick little things. Frog sashimi. You ended up liking it?
Fantastic. The tinny, sort of metallic, thin flavor of reptile is ideally suited to eat sashimi style with a little bit of soy and wasabi. It was fantastic.
Frog ovary soup.
Very benign. You really don't know what you're eating. I wouldn't call it a gimmick food, but it's one of those things that's eaten in traditional Chinese medicine and it's, you know, other corollaries in other Southeast Asian countries as medicine. It's not intended to be good food. It's intended to be provocative.
Bat.
Much better than I thought it would be. giant 10-pound, and remember, a conventional supermarket chicken is 2.5 to 3 pounds, Ian.
Right, yeah.
A 10-pound giant fruit bat that has done nothing but live on a teeny island in Samoa eating only breadfruit its whole life. It's such a clean animal that when they hunt them and eat them, you can eat the intestines raw. That's how clean the animal is. Very good barbecued with fresh wild ginger juice over a coconut husk fire.
Okay, so free-range bat. Then none of these, none of the farm-raised bats that the rest of us have.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
Okay, and then all right, soup number five.
Oh my gosh! In Agnino Province, in the Philippines, about 2 hours outside of Manila, they have a restaurant there that's popular for what's called soup number five, which everyone in the Philippines knows what you're talking about, and it's basically the butt and the balls of several different animals all simmered in a putrefied poultry broth. It's very sludgy and slimy, but you can taste the country's struggle and history in that dish.
And did it taste? Did the country struggle taste good?
It tasted interesting to me. And this is what's fascinating, because you talk to people there, and you know, my immediate question after eating it was, why would someone eat this? And then the grandma who made it for me in the restaurant began to describe the condition of the people when this, you know, and her starving artist husband who made this for his friends, and it was what they could eat for free. Basically,
right.
Back then, what they pulled out of the garbage can. And,
sure.
It's an amazing, amazing story. You know, I had the privilege of eating with a 94-year-old woman in Mississippi. She was making raccoon and possum. And it did not taste very good. It tasted gamey and a little overripe, a little barnyardy, a little woodsy. Like it had, these animals pick over a lot of dead feral things in the forest. And
right.
She held my hand and began to tell me about the slaves coming from out of the slave house in the middle of the night, and they could only hunt and kill animals that froze in the lantern light. And she began to describe to me the tradition of pulling the vegetable greens and other things out of the garbage from the big house, and it was food that was familiar to them coming from Africa. And you begin to get to know the people and hear the stories, and you begin to understand how food moves around the world. It moves you in an incredible way, and I thirst for that high again of meeting these people and tasting these foods. So while, you know, roasted raccoon in Mississippi may not be everybody's cup of tea, it's the sum totality of the moment. I would hasten to say that you and your wife's favorite restaurant is your favorite not just for the food, but for the ambiance or the way they know you or the table or that your friends are always there. Some other sort of aspects of the experience that make it whole for you. And it's the same thing for me with these foods. Sure, on its own, some, you know, Samoan bat. Well, you know, good, right. Not good. But I think that the questions that need to be asked are much bigger than that. You know, why do they eat it? Where do they eat it? How do they hunt it? Who are you eating it with? It, you know, with the moon coming up over the, you know, over the, you know, Pacific, you know, islands there on the night that I ate that bat. There's nowhere I'd rather be in the world than right there at that moment.
Was there any place you would have rather have been when you were eating fermented fish heads in Alaska?
Yes, anywhere.
Yes.
There's a handful of foods that, you know, I mean, although I will say, you know, I'd spent the whole day riding around on a snow machine being ridden around by a 75-year-old grandma who ended up taking me to her friend's house where those stink heads, by the way, are rolled in hay that's matted with animal urine, and it's buried in the ground. And then when it's putrefied, they dig it up and they slice it and eat it. a horrific food, but you have to understand that up there, you know, the permafrost lasts all year long. You're sure. You're above the meltout line. And this is the food of subsistence and necessity, and we don't eat that way here in this country.
No.
And all you have to do is experience that a couple thousand times like I have to really get turned on by the experience. You get very grateful. It changes. You're right. It does change your life. But I think it's important that we see that. I think it's important that our kids know that that's the way people eat, and that's the way people ate here in the place that you and I live in Minnesota.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way they ate 100 years ago.